Welcome to You, Me, Empathy. Thank you for listening. We would like to remind you that this podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only, and is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Known as just a silly boy with a feely heart. Please consider supporting the show. Check us out on Patreon or simply leave a review on iTunes. Here's your host and creator of the show, Known Wells.
Hello, feely humans. Welcome to another episode of You, Me, Empathy, and Coronavirus. Yes, you heard it. This is a special bonus episode. Two episodes in 1 week. Aren't you guys lucky? This is episode 123, special Friday episode. I just thought it would be important to sit down and talk a little bit about what's happening right now in the world. This is a global pandemic, and there's a lot of collective anxiety happening, and I thought it would be good to sit down with a few therapists to talk about empathy in the time of coronavirus, and we do that. So in the first part of this episode, I talk with Sydney Marmer. We talk about self-development, self-love, self-compassion, and looking at life as a playground as opposed to how we're not doing things right or wrong, quote unquote. We also talk about the kindness pandemic that's happening right now, and being empathetic to the people who are panic buying. So Sydney and I are in the first chat, and then in the second, it's with Bex Kagan, who's also a therapist. We talk about being a highly sensitive person during this time, how being strong doesn't mean being without emotion. We talk about control and radical acceptance and paying attention to the small things. And then in the last chat in this episode, I chat with Jess Springle, who's also a therapist. We talk about eating disorder recovery during this time and the importance of keeping up with normal routines, coming to terms with the, quote, new normal, and the fact that whatever you're feeling is A-okay. You hear that? Whatever you're feeling is okay, because right now it's, like I said, it's unprecedented. None of us have experienced this before, so whatever you're feeling is okay. I hope you enjoy this episode. This is a special one. Let's see what else. Please. If you haven't left a review for You, Me, Empathy in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the podcast, please do that. It really does help out the show. It's a free way to support the show. So if you haven't yet done that, do that and, tell your friends about You, Me, Empathy, and make sure you're subscribed on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Make sure you're subscribed and you're leaving reviews. Thank you. Helps out the show. Appreciate it. And make sure to follow You, Me, Empathy on the Insta at You, Me, Empathy, and Twitter at You, Me, Empathy, and on Facebook, facebook.com/You, Me, Empathy. And go check out Feely Human. Feely Human is a new business that I am working on, and it should be out in May. And if it's not, I'm not going to kick myself too hard. I've been working very hard every day on it, but it's a new collective, collaborative space for all of us to learn and inspire and empower each other. And there'll be workshops and a shop and a journal and art collaboration and things like that. So if you're feeling called to lead a workshop for the Feely Human Collective, or if you're an artist who wants to collaborate, let me know. DM me on Instagram at Feely Human. Okay, I think that about does it. Enjoy this special bonus episode with my guests, Sydney Marmer, Bex Kagan, and Jess Springle on empathy in the time of coronavirus.
You and me, empathy. empathy. La la la, la la la. You. Me. Empathy.
Hello, Feely Humans. This is Known Wells, your friendly host of You Me Empathy. And this is a very special episode. I'm here with a therapist, and over the next hour and a half or so, I'll be talking with three separate therapists and three separate conversations about empathy in the time of COVID-19 or the coronavirus, self-care, you know, first times, sort of all these things that we're feeling right now, which is a lot of anxiety. And what are we doing with ourselves at home? And how do we navigate this thing that we've never experienced? And I thought it would be a good idea to have three therapists on the show talking about that and talking about how their world has been impacted and all of that stuff, because this show is about, you know, meeting you, everyone. And I know you've reached out to me, and I know I've been feeling anxious and wanting to feel a little better. So I hope this episode does help with that. So without further ado, my first guest is a therapist who hails from Connecticut. She is a Reiki master and a therapist in Connecticut. And her name is Sydney Marmer. Hello, Sydney.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. Happy to have you on You Me Empathy.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm very excited and also eager and nervous and just being human in this.
Good.
Very excited nonetheless.
Well, that's the best thing about it is I like to show up as a human because that's what we are. And if you're nervous, that's okay. Like I'm, you know, to be perfectly open, I'm nervous before all of these. So it's okay. It's okay. However you're feeling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Sydney, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about, your practice and, your experience, as a therapist and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so I'm a therapist. I have training in clinical mental health counseling, but a lot of my training has been rooted in a holistic approach to healing. So I have that Western education where we talk about all the greats in the psych world, but then my degree also is focused on integrating kind of a more Eastern perspective and understanding psychology and the human experience from like a spiritual perspective, from a higher consciousness perspective. So a lot of the therapy that I actually do kind of meets in the middle of both worlds, that looks at, okay, where is the diagnosis? Is there a diagnosis? How are we struggling with anxiety, depression, eating disorders, kind of, again, those kind of general kind of psychological experiences, but then also looking at it from a higher consciousness perspective. So how are we spiritually? How is our relationship to a higher source? Are we connected even to our own mind and our own understanding of self? And looking at therapy less of, here are all the things I'm doing wrong as a human, and let's fix that. And looking at it and approaching it as, our life is one big playground for development. And how do we, you know, keep getting up the slide and down it, going over the monkey bars? And really, how do we embark on this adventure of self-development where we aren't coming from a place of shame and anger and I'm an awful person, to I am a human who's looking to transform and change and to develop? And whether that be out of depression, out of any diagnosis, or just saying, you know what, I just want to develop as a spiritual being or as a person with a combination of the two. So I'd say my practice really is about integrating that full aspect and experience of humanness.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. There's a couple of things there that really struck out to me. One is just this idea of life being this tapestry of experiences and ebbs and flows, and it's all sort of like available to us to learn and to grow and to find ourselves in. And it's less this, like, you know, I would say probably leaning more to the Western side of thinking or American thinking, which is like, you know, we're checking boxes here. We're, you know, you have a thing and this is the solution and let's move on and crush life or whatever, you know, it's more of like a fluidity, you know, I think it's more inclusive of different ideas and different philosophies. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it really came from this place of reflection of looking at myself and being like, every time I would make a mistake or any time that I would miss the bar and I would fail, it would become like another notch of which I wasn't up to par into society's eyes. And it was so detrimental. And then it was like, well, if I looked at it, if it was just a playground, if I fell from the monkey bar or I tripped running to get to the next part of the playground, I wouldn't see it as a failure. I would just be like, oh, I just fell. You know, you just get back up. And it was really an opportunity to go from I'm not up to par to, oh, I just learned something on my way to the event that I want to be at, to the place in my life where I want to go. And so it became way more compassionate and way more exciting when I do make mistakes, when I do meet my growing edges. They don't become failures. They just become these exciting mini adventures to go on.
Oh, that's so great. I love that. It's a beautiful lens. And with that lens, like, how have you, Sydney, as a feely human and as a therapist, looked at what's happening now in the time of coronavirus and COVID-19 and all this collective fervor and anxiety?
Yeah, it has definitely been... it's been a really tough time, you know, to be honest. You know, I want to be positive. I want to, you know, hold that flame of light. But it's actually been really tough because we're all very, very sensitive right now. Everything feels explosive. You know, I feel like humanity is in this space where we're not able to discern love from hate. We're so quick to react that an offering of love can be painful. It almost kind of feels like we don't have skin anymore and we're just exposed nerves. Right. And so when someone comes to hug us or when someone comes to offer us empathy or love, it can be extremely painful because we're so alert, we're so anxious, we're so aware that we're just reacting. And so it's been really tough because, you know, we've all had experiences where we've offered empathy to people and maybe it didn't go so well, you know, maybe that's not what they needed or it wasn't coming out right. But it's been so curious to kind of be this observer of how quick people are to put other people down. But then also holding the other side, you know, you can go find the good news anywhere. You know, right. There's like the kindness pandemic groups on the internet, right. You know, so you're seeing in a way like this extreme of polarities, you know, and one of the things I've been thinking about and having a lot of conversations with the communities that I'm in have been about what if we could use this time to cultivate change through empathy rather than our anger, and really having to have that reflective moment of just even historically in the world, like a lot of change came from people being angry, from speaking out and protesting, which is beautiful and absolutely amazing. And kind of saying, well, what if we turned our anger into empathy and we created a movement and a change through love? Like, what would that do? Yeah. How would that maybe shift the type of society we'll come out as? That if the root of transformation and change for our society right now could be in empathy and connectivity and love, what would that look like versus the root of it being anger and isolation and separation?
Right.
So a lot of the conversations that I've been having have been on how do we get to that unity consciousness? How do we get to that connection space? And also saying, how are we doing that work internally? You know, how are we doing, how are we uniting within ourselves? You know, the parts of us now who, like myself, who cling to structure, who love structure, and are having to, you know, thrive in home offices without right. regular routines. You know, have I offered empathy to myself in those moments? Or has my perfectionist come out of the closet and been like, remember me?
Right.
Are you ready? you know, and having to realize that it's like, it's a two-way street, this empathy kind of conversation. And I think a lot of the therapists I've been talking with have been saying, you know, we're giving it out to clients where it's like oozing out of us, you know, and we're forgetting to give it to ourselves as well. Mm. That, you know, having conversations with clients, then being like, what is going to happen? And having to just be like, I don't know. This right. is, I cannot reassure you. I can only hold you in your pain. And seeing how that's shifting in a way, the depth that the therapy can get to, that when you're no longer just trying to hold and assure or even just supporting in the empathy, but being able to actually have an experience where I don't know. And I can't assure you, I can't sit there and hold you through this pain, knowing there's a light at the end of the road.
Right.
And seeing how that shifts, it shifts the role of compassion and the role of vulnerability and the humanness opportunities that we get to now share with everyone, that this age of perfection kind of gets to kind of fade away because no one is perfect right now.
Yeah.
The embodiment of what it means to be okay or stable right now is different for every single person.
Right. Right. So what you said there is very good. And I love it. It's such a great perspective. I'm wondering, well, a couple of things, like the thing about empathy, as you know, is it's a lot easier, like, to do it when you have that physical human connection, right?
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot more sort of mental effort to even go there. And I'll give just an anecdote in my life recently. I recently did a little presentation/workshop at a local art college on empathy. And then I was set to do one at Chapman in person, and that was canceled, right? You know, because of all of this. And my first reaction when my dear friend Rochelle, who brought these opportunities to me, said, oh, let's try this one virtually. And I said, no. My first reaction was no, because I was like, how am I, like, I was just, I think I was just thinking truly about, like, am I going to be able to really reach them in the way that I need to, and then be able to, like, connect with my face, and, you know, all these things. Like, it's such a vulnerable, like, personal activity that I have them do. And I changed my tune. I decided to do it, and it's actually coming up on Monday. But I did, because, like, I feel like it's needed, right? Like, any sort of effort in sort of putting empathy out there and trying to make people feel a little less alone and a little more connected is worth trying, right?
I would agree. And I think in a way, like, I'm totally with you. Being able to do things in person is infinitely easier. But I think the growing edge that I'm finding here is the opportunity this is giving us is it's requiring all of us to find our own power and trust it, you know? So when we're in person and one person is really vulnerable, you can feel the room change. You can feel the energy in the room shift. We are all showing up for that person. But in a digital age, we can't really feel that as well. It's not that intuitive.
Right.
And what it's requiring of us is to say, I have to hold myself in this painful moment. I have to hold my own empathy so that when I do share it digitally, other people can hold it once I have offered it to them.
Right.
You know, so right. It's asking a lot of us right now, because we want to be held more than anything. And in some cases, we can't be held by people right. anymore, you know? Yeah. And so I think it's really just, it's asking us to be the empathizer and also the empathyee. And that's tough.
Right. Yeah. And so are you like, as a therapist talking to people, and imagine there's probably lots of anxiety and uncertainty and what do I do? And you had said like, there's obviously the thing is really like we've never experienced this across the board. So none of us really know what's going to happen. So there is that, as you said, this really, you're coming face to face with the reality that like, we need to sit in this and recognize that, like, we don't know how it's going to end or when it's going to end or where it's going to end. We just know that we are here now, and how am I responding to it? So are you, like, how are you specifically, like, dealing with that level of uncertainty with your clients?
I think it's just validating that it's real and not judging people's worries.
Yeah.
You know, and also saying like, I may not have the answer, but I can sit with you in the uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And even just sharing that moment of like, I can sit with you here and I can be that reassurance of that your experience is real. Your pain is real. Your suffering is real, even if I can't give you the finish line. And I think a lot of it is coming from that non-judgmental place. If people are worried about running out of things, whether it be food or journals or bird seeds, or if they're worried about their family members, you know, if they're grocers or doctors or whatever that worry is, it's coming from that place of everything is valid. Every point of view is valid. Every feeling is valid. Every emotion is valid, because it is, because it's a natural reaction to extreme uncertainty. And so I think a lot of the work that I'm doing right now is focusing really on it is all real. And for the first time, we can validate every emotion. We don't have to challenge it. We don't have to reality test it. It's real. We can be scared that maybe we'll run out of bird seed or pet food. It's real. And it's not a hierarchy of that's what you're worried about right now, bigger picture. Like, no, that's the worry that's occupying my mind right now. And I need that to be held, and offering that space of no worry, no judgment, no feeling is insignificant or wrong.
Right.
It's all real. And I think that's where a lot of the empathetic worry and the empathetic kind of therapy for me, at least, is really rooted in of, yeah, I'm here with you and it's real. And if you need to talk to me about birdseed, let's talk about it. And that's okay.
Do you live in some sort of bird aviary? Is that the right word? Aviary?
I know what you're talking about. I think so. there's just a lot of birds where I live.
Gotcha.
You know, so.
I'm just being silly. But like I, you know, of course I lost my train of thought because I had to make some silly joke. what was I going to say? What were you saying?
That every worry is valid.
Yes. Okay. So a couple of thoughts on that. One, that's always been the case, right? Like in the sense of all feelings are valid, all emotions are valid. sometimes they were all the time. We need to be mindful of them and try to understand and unpack where they're coming from, right? In the age of coronavirus, like I've found myself, and this applies to what you were talking about, I've found myself maybe like at first glance, like being a little maybe upset by, you know, the sort of herd mentality of like stocking up on everything and buying out all of the stores, right? And then thinking like, well, what about like people who really need it? And, you know, you're not being mindful of other people. And I have to take a step back and remember that, like, okay, that's a response. That's an anxiety response, right? That's a panic response that will not continue. That's my hope, right? And the mindset of empathy, right? Thinking of others and thinking of how that impacts others will win.
Yeah, and this is actually a really vulnerable moment for me because of the fact that I wrote an article about this, really calling for us as a society to be empathetic to the people who are hurting to stock up, and saying that, you know, we are continuing to judge, and it's that judgment and fear that we're creating rather than, I'm here for you and I know that it's scary and maybe you don't need 30 of these.
Right.
You know, showing up for them in their fear rather than saying you're a bad person. You're right. Taking things from other people, because by pointing out they're taking things from other people, it's in my opinion and in my understanding and my own journey and development of empathy and humanity, it's creating a separation. It's you and I are separate. You're taking from something rather than showing up for that person and saying, hey, whoa, I see your fear. And what can I do to support you right now? What can I do to let you know it's going to be okay?
Right.
That we're all in this together, you know? And I think our society has created this sense of isolation, you know? And I know I live in kind of a more bird woodsy aviary. Area. Yeah, bird woodsy area, you know? But I don't really know my neighbors. So the idea that I could just go and be like, hey, can I borrow a cup of sugar? Would be extremely awkward for me because we've been here like a year in this home. So to now be like, hi, do you have any sugar? It would be so uncomfortable. And so I could see why.
Uncomfortable for you.
Yeah, uncomfortable for me to be like, hey, I'm out of sugar. Can I borrow a cup? Mm-hmm. So if I am uncomfortable going to my neighbors, even on a non-pandemic day, to be like, can I borrow a cup of sugar? What is going to make me feel comfortable to go to my neighbor and say, hey, do you actually have extra anything? It doesn't matter because I feel separate from them. We're not checking in on each other. And maybe that can be a challenge for me to go knock on my neighbor's doors, you know, but it's the environment that we're in right now is we are all separate from each other. None of us are connected and none of us are coming together. And I mean, that also has people are. I know a lot of people are making masks for the hospitals, which is beautiful. And we are rallying in community in a lot of ways, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, so I'm also not saying like we're all just terrible people. I see the helpers, you know, but it's like I think the call that I have really heard is this is the time to love the helpers, and it's also the time to love the people that are hard to love, the people who are hoarding, the people that are scared, the people who are panic buying and creating this environment where people don't have it. Because if I judge them, if I make them feel bad, it just continues to let them know that they are alone, that nobody is there for them.
Right.
And yeah, so
I agree. Yeah. I agree completely. And it's hard. And that's why I always say, maybe I don't always say this. Maybe I just say it in my head. Empathy takes practice. It takes time. It's not simply about, oh, I'm putting myself in someone's shoes. It's not simply that. It's much more nuanced. It takes practice. It takes skill. It takes self-awareness. It takes acceptance. It takes an understanding that we're all very different and we all have valid perspectives. And that can be hard when we see someone who's going against our sort of ethical standards, right? You know, but I think that you're right, because truly, I believe it, we all are connected. And and this pandemic impacts us all. And you know, I mean, we keep hearing it, right? Stay home. That's a perfect sort of exercise in empathy, really. Because if you think about it, staying home is a responsibly empathetic response, because the antithesis of that is going out into the world and maybe not following those rules and potentially getting people sick, or potentially passing it on, or potentially bringing it back home and not considering who's around you, right? And that's truly what empathy is about, is considering who is around us, considering the impact we have on humanity.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that's coming to mind as you're talking about this is, I think sometimes a barrier for people to be empathetic is they think that if I'm empathetic, I'm consenting and agree with the behavior. And that doesn't have to be true. I don't consent to panic buying. I don't agree with the behavior. But that doesn't prevent me from showing up for that person and saying, I see you. Exactly. And I see your fear. And so I think as if we could shift that narrative, that empathy doesn't mean you agree. Empathy just means you see the human in them and you want to be there with them.
Yeah, beautifully said. I couldn't agree more. All right. Well, I think that was a good piece, a good section with my friend Sydney, listeners, on empathy and the time of coronavirus. I hope that was helpful. Again, stay tuned for a couple more therapists coming up. Sydney, though, where can the people out there, all the Feely humans, connect with you and read your writing and all that stuff?
Yeah, so people can connect with me on my website. So it's becomingsuriani.com. So Suriani is spelled Suryani, or they can, you know, find me on Instagram at Becoming Suriani. Again, Becoming, Suryani.
Excellent. Well, Sydney, thank you so much for being a part of this.
Yes, and thank you so much for having me. It was really wonderful to talk with you and be able to share this space and this moment in history with you.
All right, Feely humans, this is the second part of this special bonus episode all about empathy in the time of coronavirus. We're talking self-care. We're talking how we can help, how we're feeling, because we're all feeling it together. And I thought it would be fun to have a few therapists on in this episode. And the second therapist I'm speaking to today is Bex Kagan. She is a psychotherapist in Denver, Colorado, and she's here. Hello.
Hey, no, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so happy to have you. I spoke with Sydney Marmer in the first part of this episode, and we talked a lot about empathy and sort of a collective empathy and sort of how that's sort of integrated into how we're feeling right now, and especially in the time of this COVID-19 coronavirus thing. My first question for you is, tell me how's it been as just a person, not a therapist, just a person living in the world, and how are you feeling with all this stuff that's going on?
Yeah, you know, I think that it's wild, right? It's a wild time for everybody. I really, as somebody who identifies as a highly sensitive person, in addition to being a therapist, it's been a bit overwhelming, you know. None of us went to grad school and studied learning a ton about how to support people through a pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people are really, really struggling. I think a lot of people are really coming together too. So for me, I'm doing pretty well. I mean, I think I'm riding the waves of emotion and feelings and frustration and anger and sadness, just like anyone. I'm a human too. And I'm also making sure that I'm taking really good care of myself so that I can be present for both my clients and just kind of the people in my personal life in general that are needing some additional support.
That's, that's great and good, good perspective. Do you ever feel like, especially now, like you have to be stronger than most because you're sort of in this position of like authority and, you know, a lot of people are leaning on therapists right now, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Definitely feel like, we are busy. I have been consistently busy with my clients and, you know, the whole concept known of being strong, I think we've really gotten away to me in this country about like what that really means, right? Mm-hmm. To me, being strong is not, you know, being emotionless. And it's more about, you know, allowing my emotions to come and for me to go through them and to actively allow myself to feel them. And get to the other side so I can support other people. So I've enjoyed deeply the conversations I've been having, in telehealth sessions, both with my clients, and I've been hopping on some calls with friends or even acquaintances who are struggling. And I do think right now that a lot of people are being asked to turn toward and not away from their feelings. Mm. And I see that as good, you know?
Yeah.
I see that as good. I think we don't have the distractions that a lot of us, you know, myself included, have been using to not really allow ourselves to experience life, from like an authentic feeling space.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I, that's so beautifully said. And I just want to repeat it for the listeners. You know, we have to look at how we're feeling. We have to go inward and sort of interact with it and be curious about it, because if we ignore it or if we put it aside and bury it, or we, you know, take on the mantle of, you know, maybe the previous version of what strong means and say, yeah, I'm just going to sort of power through this and, you know, willpower and American ideal and whatever, you know, we're doing ourselves a disservice. And I love that, you know, if we're going to sort of call any, and I'm not saying you're saying this, but this is what I'm saying. If there's a silver lining in all of this, and certainly there's a lot of collective suffering happening, but, you know, one perspective could be that, like, yes, this is a time that's challenging us to look at our emotions. And I think, as you said, I think that's a really good thing. So my follow-up to that is, how do we, in the context of coronavirus, in the context of being sort of quarantined and staying at home, and a lot of people in situations like they've never been in before, how do you both do a thing, i.e. look at our emotions and be curious about them, and do it within the context of this new thing? I mean, both activities could be new things to people, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, it's so much easier said than done, right? Yeah. And I think a lot of people are struggling from a place of fear, and that's really, really understandable. I mean, there's a lot of unknowns and a lot of loss of control right now going on for humanity that has never happened ever, right? Especially globally. And so I would, you know, encourage people to really get connected with themselves. I think, you know, we're all kind of stuck in these living environments now and feeling really imprisoned by our by our homes. And I think it's, you know, bringing up a lot of underlying issues that already existed in relationships. And certainly there's a lot of people that are being asked to work full time from home, parent two kids full time. You know, it's a lot. And so I think, you know, like to return to the coping mechanisms that maybe we already have been doing in our lives that we didn't realize were so important. I think it's really easy in times of overwhelm to throw things out the window, like eating healthy or exercising, setting some sort of routine. I think it's really individualistic, though, Noan, you know, so yeah. You make a really good point. Some people haven't really ever had to sit with their feelings or wanted to sit with their feelings.
Right.
And then once they're feeling them now, like, what do they do with them? And so I would really highly recommend for everybody to find a place of, whether it's journaling or whether it's some kind of artistic expression, whether it's music, whether it's a dance party, or going on a run, like really getting it out of your body. Some of us, myself included, need to really talk through things and process things with somebody who is a person of trust. Mm. And I think it's so important for everybody to have that one person in their life, whether it's their partner or whether it's their best friend or whether it's somebody like me who's like a licensed therapist to just get this stuff out of our heads and out of our hearts. Because what I find with a lot of people is they generally feel like they're the only one feeling what they're feeling. And time and time again, whether it's the coronavirus going on right now or it's something else, you know, I end up hearing the same stories from the same people. Mm. And so for people to acknowledge that too, that, the concept of feeling alone in a house, especially for those folks who live alone, right, and are really kind of stuck inside themselves more than others, to acknowledge that is just a thought, right? That's actually not reality.
Mm, yeah.
And I think, you know, what I've noticed both in some of my friends and some of my clients is this tendency prior to all of this to, you know, to isolate, not even necessarily in a physical sense, but in an emotional sense, to isolate away from humanity, away from loved ones when they're really, really in their feelings. And I would really encourage people to do the opposite, to kind of push that tendency, to connect. And what I believe people will find on the other side of that is other people who can relate.
Yeah. No, absolutely they will. And there are spaces, you know, if you don't, like, yeah, like you said, a partner, a best friend, a therapist, even safe spaces like a podcast, you know, or, you know, someone online you can connect with right now. Ultimately, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about this. Ultimately, it's about like integrating those feelings, right? It's like, yes. Rather than, you know, I like maybe if you want to sort of picture this, these feelings, you know, maybe they're locked in these cages or, yeah, you know, behind this wall. But we need to break the wall open. We need to, you know, unlock those cages to allow the feelings to go through us, right? And yes, sort of integrate into our, you know, our brains and our minds and our feelings and all of it. And it just needs to be integrated. It's like a washing over that allows us to see them and then kind of process them and then, take action on them or don't take action, but at least they're integrated. But when they're not, it's like integration, I think, is used a term that's used a lot in EMDR. You know, you're sort of like stuck in this thing, right? And right, EMDR allows people to reintegrate those memories back into their system to allow them to kind of work through them, as right, opposed to like being stuck, right? We don't want to be stuck as humans.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, one thing I've really been thinking about lately is that, you know, our emotions and our feelings, they need a place to go. right?
Yeah.
The more I see people compartmentalize or bottle, soon to explode. Like you said, there's no sense of allowing, and there's this underlying pushing away. And I do think it's really scary for people to be feeling so much right now. And I know that for a lot of people, the reason that we can get excessively logical and try to, you know, push away feelings is because there's no control in feelings. They're a roller coaster.
Right.
And they are for all of us, you know, and to normalize that, to really honor, like, I'm feeling really angry right now. And here's why. And to allow it and to accept it and to let it be okay.
Exactly. And talk a little bit about the control piece of it, because like you said, right now is a time that none of us have experienced before. I was listening to Brené Brown's new podcast, Unlocking Us, which is fantastic. And in her first episode, she was talking about FFTs, or as she calls them, fucking first times. but she was talking about like the idea of like, this is all a first time for us. And it's okay not to have like this sort of set in stone roadmap, but for a lot of us, that's a scary place to be, right? Cause you know, a lot of us like find, maybe grounding or meaning or just feel a little less scared or anxious when we have like a roadmap, but we don't have a roadmap.
Right. Yeah. And it's allowing, or it's causing people to be very anxious, which is completely understandable, right? There's this whole concept, if we focus on the future, then we're anxious. And if we focus on the past, then we're depressed. And how do we stay in the here and the now right now to hopefully find some sort of peace? And it's easier said than done, right? And so, yeah, I think for me, the biggest thing I'm seeing and I'm feeling and I'm sensing and I'm listening to, coming from my clients is exactly that, right? This loss of like, this is so out of my control. Everything has been kind of taken from me and I don't know what to do with myself now. And, I really think now is the time for people to, get in touch with this concept called radical acceptance, which is, it's not easy. You know, I don't think any of this stuff is easy, but it's all about, the concept that life is out of control, and what aspects of my life right now do I have control over? And that could be anything from, you know, when I make my coffee this morning, I was making, you know, French press coffee and just doing a little bit of a mindfulness activity while I'm making it. And really, like, my, I don't know about you, but my coffee has never tasted better than it has during the quarantine.
Mm.
Because I'm really appreciating these little things. And so I, you know, things like, you know, am I going on walks every day, getting out of my house? Am I sitting in the sunshine when the sun's outside my door, you know?
Yeah.
Am I choosing to, you know, listen to a Brené Brown podcast, or am I allowing myself to, you know, watch Netflix for, you know, 8 hours straight, which doesn't feel good for me, right? Like, am I nourishing my soul, or am I choosing to kind of feed the beast, so to speak?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, the loss of control is big. I just want to normalize it for everybody, myself included. There's a lot of things that have been taken away, and there's a lot of grief and loss and anxiety in that. And there's also aspects of our suffering, our collective suffering and our individual suffering right now that we do still have control over that can help us.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I do talk a lot about control in my own life and on this podcast. And I think it's, our sort of want for control as humans can lead to a lot of anxiety and suffering and struggle.
Yeah.
Because as you said there, and I believe this, there isn't a lot that we can control, but, and a big, very important, but as you said, Bex, there are little things that can really kind of remind us that, okay, we do sort of contain our world and we can interact with our world. Like just the example of the French press and thinking about you doing that in the morning, like made me sort of like, you know, that fills my heart a bit because I'm thinking of like someone else like looking at that and saying like, okay, watch, I'm so talking through that, like I am making coffee for myself. Yeah. I am doing this activity. It's for me and my partner or whatever. And this coffee will nourish me and it'll make me feel better about the morning. And like these little sort of rituals are like so important right now. Like I remember, just this week I was feeling like it's been very, sort of dreary and rainy for weeks on end. And I live in Southern California and that's not the norm, but
yeah.
This week, the sun popped out and I made an intentional point of getting out into the sun midday for just like 30 minutes and just sitting out there and kind of closing my eyes and reminding myself that, okay, the sun is good for me. I'm getting vitamin D. I'm taking a break from my work, which I need, you know, because I have a tendency to like just go, 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 go.
Yeah.
And especially now, right? Especially in the time of coronavirus, like feeling like just this propelled by this like steady hum of anxiety. So getting out of that and feeling that and it just takes little moments like that, but it takes presence. It takes mindfulness. It takes paying attention.
Exactly. Yeah. I think now, you know, you hear a lot about mindfulness in the mental health world and there's a big push for it. And, but now is the time to truly find some sense of gratefulness. And like you said, the very little things, like I was sitting outside my house, the other day and I saw this woman on a walk and I heard this really beautiful bird chirping. And so I was listening to it too, because I've been really, mindful to not be stuck in my headphones. It's very easy right now to be stuck in music or just be stuck constantly in a podcast or to be constantly on a, you know, call with a friend to distract, right? To push away.
Right.
And so my walks and both just like you said, sitting outside in the sunshine have been really intentional about not doing that. And I saw this woman on this walk who, by the way, I mean, my roommate and I have been saying, like, we have never seen some of our neighbors ever. Like, everybody.
I keep hearing this more and more. Yeah.
Which has been really powerful, I think. You know, here in Denver, we've been blessed with, you know, a good amount of sunshine, but we also had a snowstorm last night. But this, going back to this woman, she was on the walk and I heard the bird chirping and I was like, huh. Like, I don't really know much about birds. Huh, I wonder what the bird looks like because I couldn't really see it. And I see her walking and she stops and she looks up at the bird and she just kind of stood there listening to the bird chirping. And like, we had this moment, right? We didn't even speak. We didn't even make eye contact, but then she like stood there mindfully and then kept walking. And those are the things that we have control over right now. Noticing, you know, the feeling of our foot touching the floor in the morning and like we were talking about with the coffee, you know, walking yourself through the things that actually bring you small pieces of joy.
Yeah. And for the listeners listening, I just want to say to you, like, these types of practices, like, they, you know, they take time, they take practice, you know, they take effort, but you can get there. And even like, you know, a part of me, and you know, maybe I'm playing the devil's advocate now, like a part of me is like wondering if like some people listening are like bristling at the sort of the, you know, oh, you guys and your mindfulness or whatever, like it's like
your woo woo. Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, you know, truly what we're talking about is just paying attention. And there's so much in connection and healing, in empathy, in recovery, in beauty, that's just paying attention. And there's so much distraction in life. There's so much media, and there's so much news, and you know, Trump doing awful things. And like, there's just like all this distraction, but like there is truly, if you just pay attention, there's truly so much beauty and healing and just controlling what you have in front of you, just looking at what you have in front of you, just kind of reminding yourself that like, this is what you have here and now. And no amount of like, you talked about it, Bex, no amount of like looking to the future or to the past, is going to change that, because you have what you have now. And let's live for that. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, shit also gets to be hard, right? I mean, there's been days for me, for a lot of people, that I'm in a mood and, you know, I go on a walk or I sit in the sunshine and it's just not working. Right. And so I'm just sitting in my feelings and it just gets to be hard and it gets to suck too. So that sense of allowing as well. But yeah, I think it's important to have, these little pockets of, trying to embrace life in a little bit of a different way and conceptualize life in a different way. I was really appreciating what you were saying about work breaks. Gosh, that is so important right now.
Yeah.
To be setting some time aside to kind of nourish your body and your mind. It's very easy right now for some people who have the work to do, you know, to be working 12-hour days, you know, just to feel productive or feel like they're doing something. And I really think there's some sort of balance in that, right? To feel productive in the little things, but to also be taking some time to care for yourself, because nobody else will do it for you, right?
Right, right. And, you know, I with that, I'll just addendum this, which is I'm very lucky and privileged to still have a job. You know, my job, my day job, I technically have three jobs, but my day job, I work from home, and I have been working from home for years. And so I feel very lucky in that. And my heart goes out to all the folks who have lost their jobs, who have been, you know, very impacted by, this, you know, these stay at home orders, you know, the coronavirus in general. You know, just know that it is hard and you're not alone. And, these tools can help you too. And I don't know why I said two in that weird way. Two.
Tool?
Two. Anyways, I think I was saying tool again, but I said two. Anyways, just know that you're not alone, and my heart goes out to you. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, there's a lot of that I think that's been one of the hardest parts for me as an empath and highly sensitive person and just somebody who genuinely cares about others, is to see the devastation. And I've been, you know, kind of hyper focused on locally. We have, you know, we have like Facebook groups where people are trying to help each other, and a lot of people who don't have any work and don't know what that's going to mean for the future of their family. People who had, you know, some sort of foundation under them that they feel like has been kind of pulled out. And so that's a whole another piece of what's going on for a lot. And what I'm seeing here in Denver is there's a lot of people really, really wanting and needing and enjoying helping people who are in that situation right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been like out of control in a good way to kind of be part of some of these Facebook groups where some people are finding the courage to ask for support. And you know, you'll have like 40 people respond to this person. And that's, you know, certainly in the moment support. I think, you know, we need to figure out better ways that we're going to support each other in the long run. But I think there's, it's giving me, you know, small bits of hope for getting through this together.
Yeah, absolutely. I have been so encouraged by, there's great, I'm in a Facebook group, called Day by Day. That's great. Jennifer Pasloff, my buddy Jennifer Pasloff, is doing live Instagrams with all these like celebrities and sort of donating food to people who don't have it right now.
Yeah.
People are, you know, sewing masks for healthcare workers.
Yeah.
There's a lot of beauty that's happening, and it's really such a testament to how much we are connected as humans. And it's really nice and beautiful to see.
It is. Yeah. And just to circle back to this whole concept of, you know, being strong during this time, I really think, you know, we sometimes have to surrender our ego and kind of negotiate within ourselves. How can I get my family or myself what I need, and find the courage to speak up and speak out? And I'm seeing that received in a really good way, even though I know it's really scary and difficult to ask for support when you really are in such a dark, hard place.
Yeah. I just wanted to share a resource that I discovered this week. It's giveandgetlocal.com. It's powered by Square. And essentially, it's all of sort of your local favorite sort of independent merchants, you know, businesses that use Square. You can search like in your area and buy gift cards. It's really neat. So it's giveandgetlocal.com if you guys want to check it out.
Love it.
Yeah. Bex, where can the Feely humans out there connect with you and learn more about the work you're doing in the world?
So I have a website, www.BeckyKagan, KAGAN, as in Nancy, counseling.com. They can also email me at BeckyKaganCounseling@gmail.com.
Lovely. Well, thanks. Thanks for being a part of this special bonus episode, Bex.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, Noan. I enjoyed it.
All right, listeners, Feely humans, this is the third installment, the third and final installment in this very special episode all about empathy in the time of coronavirus. We're talking self-care. We're talking tools to kind of get through this time. And today I am very honored to have Jess Springle, the therapist who is originally from New York, but is now operating in the lovely, lovely city of Austin, Texas. Hello, Jess.
Hello.
How are you?
We're asking the same question.
We are.
It's good. It's a lovely 80 degrees here in Austin today. So I'm feeling good about that.
Excellent.
Can't complain.
Yeah. And since we're talking weather, I guess it's partially sunny here with some clouds.
Oh. That's yeah, it's cloudy here, but still really hot because that's just what Texas is.
Yeah. I love Austin. Austin is a lovely, lovely town, as I mentioned before.
It is. It's a great place to live. Everyone's so friendly, which is very different from New York. People don't aggressively avoid eye contact here. Mm. They seem to be like always trying to have a conversation, which I can appreciate.
Yeah, I like that. Now needed more than ever.
Yes. Although there's a little bit less of that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yell to each other.
That's right. Yell kind words to each other from across the street.
That is a little bit more like New York.
That's true, huh? Just yelling at each other. Hey, get out of my way. No, sorry. That's I did live in New York actually for 2 years after college many years ago.
Oh my gosh.
I do like New York.
Yeah. It's a great place, but it's an acquired taste.
It is. As we all are.
Yes, that is also true.
So, Jess, tell the listeners a little bit about your practice and the work you do.
Sure. So I have my own private practice in Austin where I specialize in seeing adolescents, young adults, and families who are affected by eating disorders, disordered eating, and body image disturbances, and also adjacent issues because eating disorders are usually comorbid with a whole ton of things, which means that a lot of people who have eating disorders also have anxiety, depression, substance use issues, etc. So I mostly see, that's about 90% of my practice, I would say. I also still maintain a license in New Jersey because that was where I was originally licensed. So I do see folks virtually from that neck of the woods and also with eating disorders. But yeah, I mean, I love what I do. I've been treating eating disorders for about 5+ years now. And I really can't imagine doing anything else. It's a tough, definitely a tough job, but I don't think that I would be fulfilled doing anything else.
Yeah. Well, amazing. It's important work, and I'm glad you're doing it. Tell me, how has the impact been for your clients, specifically around, like, you know, managing their eating disorder recovery in the time of coronavirus?
It's interesting, I've been getting this question a lot. I think because people are really worried about folks with eating disorders during this time, because so much of eating disorder pathology or just symptoms is around isolation. And this is a time where isolation is being recommended. So people, I would say a lot of my clients are hanging in there, which just goes to show how resilient and amazing so many people are.
Yeah.
But I think it is tough because it's not only impacting food, because in certain areas, food is not necessarily scarce, but people are stockpiling. So it's become scarce. I don't even know how to say that word.
I like scarce. Scarce is fun. I think we as a human society should start adopting scarce.
Yeah, I like that. I like that pronunciation better. but I think it's more honestly about that lack of connection, and just clients are so eager to see my face through the video chat. Which, you know, I really thought that people would have trouble with it, but it seems like people are so excited just to be able to connect that they'll take it, and that's been relieving. But I mean, yeah, this is a tough time. It's really difficult for folks to connect via video chat if that's really the only way.
Right.
So many people with eating disorders really thrive on that, like, physical contact too. And especially in recovery, a lot of recovery is learning how to, like, accept physical contact, like accept hugs or accept, you know, cuddles. And yeah. I think that without that, that can be a pretty major drawback to recovery, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm reminded of, like, the time I went to, so I'm recovered anorexic myself. And I'm reminded of the time I went to this camp where I did a little workshop for Project Heal on the campus called Camp Heal.
Awesome.
And it was great. It was amazing. But it was the first time I'd ever been around people in recovery or who have recovered, who consider themselves recovered from eating disorders, because I sort of did my recovery alone. Because it was 20 years ago, right? And the community there was so just strong and connected. And these are people who may have never met in person before, but the camaraderie around their collective healing was so palpable. And I'd imagine that has been disrupted during this time because there's such a camaraderie around eating disorder recovery, right?
Right. And I mean, I could speak to that as well, because I'm also a recovered human. And I mean, I cannot imagine, looking back on my own experiences, I was really fortunate to have access to spaces where there were other people with eating disorders. And, you know, attending groups was a huge part of my own healing. And I can't know, I can't imagine not having had that. So I know that this is really disruptive to people just in that way. I run a group actually every Monday through the Alliance for Eating Disorders Awareness. And I know my group members are really bummed out that group is canceled for now. But I know that based on, you know, they've reached out and it seems like they're still supporting each other, which is great. But it is, it's a huge loss to not have that community. Although I can only speak for the Alliance, but I think a lot of organizations are really pushing to try to provide some online resources. Yeah. I know that like last night I did a Facebook Live with the Alliance where people could sort of pop in and ask questions, and they've done a number of those. And I think a lot of professionals and organizations are trying to do that, really rally and provide as many services as possible.
Right. No, that's amazing. That's great to hear. And you know, it's also understandable that, you know, it's that kind of like shift takes time, right? Yeah. For an organization to kind of get on board with. I'm curious, Jess, what kind of tools, what kind of, what are you sharing? What are you giving, as sort of practical, sort of like now that I'm home and everything's changed and the world seems awash in this collective hysteria, what kind of tools are you giving to your patients to sort of work through the feelings of that and still manage and progress in their recovery?
That is a good question, the $1 million one. I mean, something that has really been a focus of my past like week and a half, 2 weeks with clients has been trying to create a routine and really emphasizing those basic needs. So, you know, not falling off from the things that you would do to take care of yourself in quote unquote normal times. So, you know, if you would get up and shower and eat breakfast and go to work, like those things are not things that should stop. It's just more of adapting, okay, clear, maybe I can wake up a little later, but I still want to make sure I do X, Y, Z to get my day started. Even things like getting dressed or like putting makeup on, if that's your jam, like doing things that are still in alignment with what you were doing before, but might just look a little bit different. But also, of course, adding to the space of that you might now have, because I know, I mean, I can to only speak for myself, but I know that I have a little bit more downtime than I'm used to. And like, it's kind of strange. It feels like a weird space to fill. Hmm. So I've definitely been working on clients with, okay, like what have you been wanting to do with, you know, with your day that maybe you haven't had that extra hour to do? Like now you have the extra hour. So what do you want to fill it with? And for some people that's like watching a new show or like listening to music while doing a puzzle or, you know, doing things that really people wanted to do anyway, but just haven't had the space in their day to do. So that's kind of cool in its own way, that people now have that space. I think it's harder when people have like kind of endless time now, if like they've been laid off or if they just, you know, or if they're home from school and don't really have a whole lot of schoolwork to do. So then I think that's where that routine comes in extra handy and is super crucial. Even if it feels, I mean, I've heard from some clients like, oh, this feels pointless. Like why am I going to get up and do these things if like I'm not going anywhere? That's not really about going anywhere. It's about like being grounded and centered in yourself that like, okay, this is who I am and these are the things I do. And I value like having a schedule and having a daily routine that makes me feel more grounded.
Yeah, no, I love that. And you're kind of just like, you're reminding yourself that you still have like pockets of control around you, right? Like you can control this thing when everything feels maybe a little bit out of control. I know that that has been helpful for me in my sort of day to day work routine is like, hey, I'm getting up, I'm making coffee, I'm getting dressed, you know, I'm going to still wash my face, you know, brush my hair, you know, those types of things that, maybe we'd take for granted and just kind of let go because, you know, everything's burning and who cares, right? Like our right. minds can easily go to that point.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think the first, like the first week felt like that for me where I was just in this, like, I think it was on Thursday because I started virtual on last, so like 2 weeks ago now. And it like, I guess it really sunk in like, oh, this is going to be the new normal for a while. And had a little bit of a panic because I think that's normal. Yep. And it just, it felt like, oh, what is the point? Like just like the world is collapsing. I'm just going to do what I want. Right. Fortunately that passed. I like just needed to like take a lap and listen to my audiobook, and then I returned and was fine. But yeah, I mean, I can understand feeling that way. It's really hard not to feel that way right now.
No, totally. I mean, we've never experienced anything like this. So however you're feeling, this is to you, Jess, and to everyone listening, is okay, you know, yeah. because we've never experienced this before. So, you know, think about how you're feeling and give yourself a little kindness and know that some of the tools that Jess is talking about in sort of getting up and, you know, showering or whatever it is for you, find little things that ground you and it'll get easier because change is hard, you know, anytime. Like change is hard for all of us. And, you know, finding little pockets of control or grounding or just connecting with others is going to be a huge sort of boon to your mental health during this time.
Agreed. Yeah. And yeah, self-compassion is critical right mm-hmm. now. Just giving yourself some grace because this is uncharted territory and like no one knows how to deal with this. This isn't just people in recovery or people with mental illness. Like no one knows how to deal with this and everyone deserves some compassion around all of this.
Yeah. Do you find that in your clients or people you've spoken to during this time that there is a lack of compassion for ourselves or people taking things hard on themselves?
Oh, definitely. Well, I think honestly, just with eating disorders in general, folks are often pretty self-critical. I'm laughing because I'm like, well, yeah, I could relate to that. that's certainly something that is pretty consistent across my clients. And it is hard, I think, to have compassion because it feels like, you know, if you look on social media, people seem to be doing so much, like they're being quote unquote productive in all of these ways. So I think that there's this feeling of, oh, well, I'm not really being productive. So clearly, like, I'm not doing enough during this time. And then there's just a lot of self-criticism in right. wake of that.
Right.
The productivity piece seems to be pretty big. Like people are really feeling like they're supposed to be productive during this time.
Yeah. And that's just, again, I'm telling this to myself and everyone is that's just comparing. And don't do that. Don't do that because, right. we don't need to feel that way. However, feeling is okay. And, if we want to do a puzzle or if we want to sit on the couch for a bit or maybe we do feel inspired to write something or whatever, but don't feel like you need to like, let's not take the sort of fervor and obsession with productivity that existed before and take it into this time that is unprecedented and changing and probably will change things going forward. So part of me, like silver lining in sort of trying to look at these things in positive ways is remembering that like, hey, maybe coming out of this, there will be this reinvigoration of the collective empathy or this abandonment of these pretty insidious American ideals that we need to abandon, i.e. productivity or busyness or whatever, you know?
Right. I agree. I hope. I really and truly hope that what ultimately comes out of this is people being kinder to each other, which seems like such a small thing, but it's really not. Because I think throughout all of this, it's been like so many people have struggled to like follow the social distancing and really adhere to these, not quarantine, but basically these new protocol. And I think a lot of it is because it's really difficult to understand sometimes how your experience might impact another person or how another person's experience might impact yours.
Exactly.
And it's because as a culture, we just don't emphasize empathy. There is so much like, it's like be productive at whatever cost, even if it hurts somebody else. And that's, I just hope that throughout all of this, people can learn that it's like productivity right now is really not, that's not the goal. Like right now, it's just actually being a little bit more relaxed and being more grounded, because that's actually more likely to keep you safe and healthy versus like grinding and continuing to stress yourself out. Like that's more likely to get you sick.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, 100%. And listeners, like, if it takes something like this, this coronavirus, and which is global, right, to realize how connected we all are and how our choices impact others and impact the earth, like that's okay. But that's the reality. That is the truth. Like I firmly believe that each of us are connected and we have a responsibility to be mindful of that and think about how our choices and actions impact others, and impact the earth and so forth. And, you know, that coming from like a American lens, that may sound a little, socialist or something, but it's reality and it's truth and I believe in it. And it's not political. It's human. It's human decency and kindness and thinking about others. That's simply what it is.
I agree. And I think right now, especially like we all really need to be connected to each other, whatever that means and whatever that looks like. And I know for me with still seeing my clients and like it is important to still connect, even if it feels different and weird. It's just, yeah, it's going to take some time to adapt, but that doesn't mean that it's not adaptable.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of us use social media and technology anyway. It's just now we have to use it in a much different way. And yeah, I think that takes some compassion towards ourselves, but also compassion towards others that like other people might not really be super savvy with all of that stuff. And it's yeah. Okay. This is all a pretty big learning curve for all of us.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. And how were you feeling just as a therapist? Are you overwhelmed with people wanting to speak with you? Are you feeling pressure, you know, all of that?
It seems to wax and wane, you know, day to day, where I feel like one day I'll feel overwhelmed, but then the next day I'm like, oh, well, I guess I don't have quite as much to do as I thought. I've been really fortunate in that my business has stayed pretty stable, which I know is a really big privilege right now. I think the therapy world is in a unique place where people certainly need services. It goes without saying, but I think unfortunately there's going to be a lot of adapting again, because insurance has been really challenging in terms of like covering telehealth, and you know, people have been laid off from their jobs, so income is different. And it's just a lot of being flexible and making sure that people have the services and wraparound care that they need. But it's certainly been overwhelming because there's just a lot of changes. And it's not, I wouldn't say necessarily that like the number of people trying to get help or trying to seek services from me has increased in any exponential way. It's just more that like shifting from in-person to all telehealth has been a pretty big change. And telehealth is exhausting. I give people so much credit for having like exclusively telehealth practices, because it is so much more, I feel like it's so much more exhausting than in-person therapy. I don't know what about it, but it, something about it just makes me a lot more tired.
That's interesting. You'd think it might be easier. Like my sort of instant reaction would be like, oh, it would be maybe be easier because like in person, you're really like seeing the person and you're picking up on their body language and emotional cues. And some of that is maybe not seen via FaceTime or whatever.
Yeah. And that's what I thought too, because I had done some virtual work before. When I moved to Texas from New Jersey, I did take some clients with me, and did virtual work with them, but these were clients that I had prepped and we had talked about it for a long time, and what the shift would be like. So it didn't feel quite as exhausting. Whereas now these are clients I never expected to see virtually. I mean, these are people who live close to my office or, travel to my office easily. So it's just a big change. And I think there's a lot more room for content. Interestingly, I think in person having silence is like a very important therapeutic tool. Whereas via FaceTime or Skype or fill in the blank, there seems to be less of that. Like there's a lot of people trying to fill the space versus like, okay, we can sit and be quiet for a few minutes and just think. So I think that's part of it too.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I hadn't thought about that because there's almost like a, you feel like sometimes on the phone, like if there's silence, it's awkward or something and you have to fill that space. And it's, right. I guess it's easier to sit in silence with someone because you're there, you're looking at them. I hadn't thought about that. That's a really good, interesting observation. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely having to think about all of these things in new and different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, just personally, are you holding up okay? How are you just feeling?
I'd say all things considered, I'm doing all right. And I think it helps. Like, I live with my husband and we have our pets, and I don't know how I would manage if I did not have another person living with me. I'm definitely someone who thrives on human contact.
Right.
And this has been, I think this has been a really challenging experience for me just because I'm someone that really loves to be out of my house and out and about in Austin.
Right.
So I think that's been a challenge, but fortunately I think with just the contact I have in my own home, that's been really helpful. I think this is stressful. I think it definitely brings up a lot of existential anxiety about like, oh my God, like what is going to happen to our world? And I try not to get too lost in that, but it's hard. It's hard not to, but overall, I would say I'm managing as best I can day to day. And I think that's where most people are. Right now we're kind of living in a trauma and we're like kind of watching it impact us. It's just, there's not very much we can do to prevent it from impacting us.
Yeah. As we start to wrap up here, what would you say to someone who's at home and feeling just uncertain, feeling out of control, feeling just a lot of anxiety right now? Like, what would you say to that person?
That it's okay. That these are like these feelings are so normal right now, and that the response that you're having is like biologically, psychologically in alignment with what's happening. Like there's nothing wrong with you. You're not broken for having this response. And that like, however you choose to deal with this, even if it's in a maladaptive way, like you're doing your best. And that's not saying like, okay, I'm giving permission to every person with any sort of maladaptive coping skill to go use it. But I think right now there needs to be more compassion around that because these things are going to happen. But like using your resources is important. Like use things that maybe like are at the bottom of your list of coping skills, like trying all of those things on your list and not just relying on those top tier things.
Excellent. Well, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
Well, Jess, where can listeners connect with you?
So you can find me on Instagram at The Cranky Therapist, spelled in all the usual ways. You can also find me on Twitter at Jess Sprengel LPC. And I think that's it. I have a website if you're interested in looking for it. It's JessicaSprengelLPC.com. But you can actually find that on my Instagram if you're curious. But other than that, I'm mostly active on Instagram.
All right, great. Well, listeners, all of those links from all three of my guests will be in the show notes for you to connect with them, and do connect with them, because they're all putting out more empathy into the world. So, Jess, thanks for being a part of this special bonus episode.
Yay. Thank you so much for having me. This has been great.
Oh, you're very welcome.